Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Commodity Week, the March 2nd edition. Crop insurance price-setting month of February has ended with a lower price than last year, but the volatility index is down too. We'll ask if it means row crop farmers in the Midwest can sign up for an RP product and then just sit back and safely watch the marketplace today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk about land values with Murray Wise of Murray Wise Associates. Our panelists in studio today include Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You can find us online at WILLAG.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming each and every business day of the year, including this program in its entirety at WILLAG.org. Well, gentlemen, let's open our discussion with this question. Are there reasons for a farmer to do anything now about pricing new crop corn and soybeans other than to sign up for crop insurance? We'll start with you, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
That's a tricky question. In the case of beans, we're about almost 50 cents above your crop insurance guarantee. We've been scaling into just a few light new crop bean sales. Corn, it gets very tricky because really comes down to individual case-by-case scenario. In a lot of cases, that 85% RP can guarantee you at or above your cost of production. And that is a situation where even though it might be uncomfortable if prices go lower, it buys you some time to see what's going to happen during the growing season. So case-by-case in corn probably makes sense to scale into maybe a few sales in the beans right now.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, Todd, I think as we look at that situation, depends on the individual and what his break-even costs are and looking at things. You know, as we look at the big acreage that's going to be coming on for corn, we have to feel that if we haven't got some protection on, maybe a little bit's warranted. And in the beans, we've been doing some $13 puts and selling calls above that and maybe puts below it to do that at about even money.
And Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
The big factor that we're focusing on in this particular environment is, of course, the corn. And, of course, when we do the simple arithmetic of 801 million carryover this year on old crop, and we're looking at a 16-16 figure on new crop, it does balloon higher, and we could see some substantially lower prices. I think the prudent way to play it is be a careful trader of corn, be bearish on the rallies, and I think it will reward you at some point in time.
From the market this week, corn futures finished with a high in the nearby March at $6.60, a low at $6.33. Settlement price was up 18 and a quarter cents. Remember, that's on the week at $6.59. We'll give you the day, the overnight, electronic and open outcry. December futures in the corn pit for the new crop settled at $5.70. It was up 12. The Ag Forum in Washington, Paul, set kind of a token flag, a marker of sorts for the 2012 crops and ending stocks. It points to a 1.6 billion bushel carryover in the fall of 2013. That, of course, should U.S. farmers plant 94 million acres this season and harvest an average yield crop of 164 bushels to the acre. Here's the question, and I'm kind of having a tough time marrying these numbers together. That $5.70 December corn futures price, it just seems way too high for a 1.6 billion bushel carryout. Why?
And when we have farmers come in the office, we're not very excited about even selling 650 plus old crop, and you guys are trying to tell me to sell new crop corn $1.20 or $1.30 a bushel under old crop corn. Forget it. We're not going to play that game with you guys because we're going to hold out for better prices. The arithmetic is simple. The marketplace is basically sending a message that we are going to have an abundance amount of corn, a lot of feed wheat in the world, a big supply of feed grains around the world, and it does make sense to be protected on new crop corn because we are going to see production agriculture kick in.
Why so high right now, 570?
Well, it looks good on paper, but we're far from having that in the bin. So if you just take the average of the last 2 years' yield on corn at 94.5 million acres, it's still very, very tight. So it's one thing to say that on paper, and if we do plant that many acres and raise that big of a crop, sure, we've got a big carryout to contend with, but we're a long way from having that big crop, record crop in the bin.
Wayne, there's been a lot of... You've got an answer?
I was just going to say the one thing, go along with what Paul says. Farmers aren't selling, so we're still bidding up, number one. Number two... What Chip said also, the yields, we don't know yet. We've got a lot of dry areas. We're talking a lot about droughty conditions in southern Minnesota, northern Iowa. That 164 is not in the book either yet, as of yet. But I think as we see the spring, the plantings happen and whatever going, we could drop 50 cents really fast.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about ethanol in recent days too, so I want to get your assessments on some things. Should the United States allow corn-based ethanol to be blended at the 15% level if it can be proven to work in all cars safely?
Definitely.
All right. What is the risk to the corn market as we approach the 2015 maximum mandated levels?
Well, I think it's what you're starting to see already, that gasoline usage has come down because of higher crude oil prices. And as you've seen that, we're building ethanol stocks and we're shrinking ethanol margins. So that's the risk going forward. No matter what the blending rate is, it still comes down to the demand side of it.
Next Friday, Wayne, USDA will release its monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Is there any reason to think those numbers will be of any consequence this time around?
Well, most definitely, Todd. We're going to be looking more so to what they are saying they think the South American production is. Informa come out today on Friday and told us that they were cutting the bean crop in Paraguay and in Argentina, I believe in Brazil the same. So, I mean, we are looking here. I mean, I'm sorry, we dropped Brazil and left Argentina the same. But there was a drop in that, and that's what sort of spooked the market a little bit on Friday.
Okay. Before we move on to soybeans, old crop sales. Let's get an assessment from each of you whether producers should hang on, and maybe you can give us a level at which you think you're comfortable if what they've got left in the bin is 15 or 20 or 25% or whatever that might be.
Yeah, I'd say no more than 20% and look for opportunities to lock the futures price in and wait on basis into spring and summer. I think that's probably a good place to be is that 15 to 20%.
We went to anywhere from 80 to 100% sold in old crop corn and beans over the last week here. We felt that we got up and achieved some goals, and the basis levels were very tight. So that way. And if we want to re-own something, we're waiting for a little break in this market when we get in the field and then looking at very cheap either calls or bull call spreads.
The farmer owns about 20 to 30% of the old crop inventory. They did a lot of selling this last week. The elevators are basically plugged with a lot of corn. The market on Friday went to an inverse. There wasn't a market analyst in the United States that thought that that would happen this early in the delivery time frame. Most of them thought that would happen in May or June or some other point in time. It is a surprise. My opinion is that the price levels from here on up a little bit higher, maybe 675, which I don't think will happen, you should move old crop inventory into the marketplace. I don't think the government's made any big major mistakes in the supply-demand tables. We will see a little tighter carryover.
Okay. Wheat futures, March contract, 671 and a half the high, the low at 630. Settlement price there was up 29 and three quarters at $6.70 and three quarters in July at 686 and a quarter. Week over week up 33 and a quarter since March. Soybeans $13.28 and a quarter for the high, the low at $12.76 and a half, a settlement price at $13.28 and a quarter, up 49 and a quarter cents from the previous week in November. That'd be the new crop, $12.98, up 27 and a quarter cents week over week. So soybeans rallied again for the week. Informa, as Wayne already told us, dropped the Brazilian crop another 2 million metric tons to 68 million metric tons. How does that compare historically, do you think, to their crop? And does it really make too much of a difference at this point?
Well, I think their ultimate crop size does make a difference. That's going to be a touch below average, especially given how good their crop went in the ground. So I think that's what the bean market's been searching for is exactly how big is that South American crop. They're getting ready to go to the fields and start kickoff harvest in a major way. So we'll soon find that out, and I think that's what the bean market's kind of been searching for. So I think the USDA's number this coming Friday will make a difference in the case of the South American production estimate.
You got some guesses for numbers on the South American estimate or what WASD might show us on Friday of this week?
Well, I think it's kind of like we saw with Informa. I think they're looking in that 68, 69 million metric ton range for Brazil. I think the Argentina corn crop is going to be also important as well, and that is kind of in that 21 to 22 million metric ton range.
When you look forward, Paul, across the board for both corn, soybeans, wheat, all of the crops for the coming year, can you hash that out in your mind of what the supply might look like and what you really think it means for agriculture in the United States?
Well, wonderful question. And my general opinion is that I think that we will get the acreage in the corn. I think we'll plant more beans because of this higher price level, but we'll take the acreage away from the wheat country, the spring wheat area. As far as the dynamics, most people I talk to, and I did a survey because of the Big Beef House Conference, most people think we are going to see a different type of price levels this coming two or three years. It's going to be a little bit more sluggish. The big price booms are probably over with for a while, and we are going to see production agriculture kick in with larger production and bigger supplies. The corn market's telling us we're going to have a very adequate price of corn, level of corn produced in the U.S. Ethanol is sluggish, and I'm afraid that's what brought us to the big party. And without ethanol, we are going to see a little more sluggish price levels.
Ethanol will be there, but we've topped out the mandate, right?
That's right. And, there's big margins there, but the trouble is it's no profitability for the ethanol producer to make it right now.
So we've topped out, but we've got until 2015 till we really finish that out. But we've had an export market for ethanol in recent years. Is that going to go away?
One thing, Todd, in Brazil mandated some big subsidies for their ethanol market that for the sugar that's going to cut us back because we export a lot of ethanol to Brazil, and they are financing that. The one thing that could happen, though, is because if they're going to keep it internally because they're upping their usage of ethanol, that could open up the European markets in ethanol that are just like Germany and that are now trying to build up a little bit. Hopefully we will pick up the European business that we went to Brazil with last year, and that might help us. But, right now we already cut back on what we're going to use corn for ethanol on the early usage. We went from that $5 billion down to the 4.85.
Your thoughts on ethanol?
Well, I think ethanol, the industry in general, is in much stronger hands now. We had that shakeout. We're going to see ebbs and flows in the ethanol industry in periods of profitability as well as negative returns. So I think the ethanol industry in general can get through that. I don't see ethanol backing off in a big way. Sure, it could fluctuate $200-300 million here and there every year. But I think ethanol's here to stay for quite some time.
Paul, when we started in 06, 07, 08 to really rally, I can recall you looking out and saying this was going to be a good time for U.S. agriculture, that 9, 10, 11, maybe 12, I think I recall you saying 12 even, might be okay, but certainly that 9 and 10 were going to be good, potentially, 11 all right. and that you were comparing them to the go-go days of the 1970s. What happens now?
You know, when I talk to these elevator people and people that are, you know, fairly high up in major grain companies, they tell me that they feel that the real go-go days are going to slow down a little bit, and it's going to be a little bit of more of an even keel. And the margins on the farmer level, particularly the big cash renters, are going to be harder to make the profits necessary to really make the big thing. It's still going to be probably fairly good times for agriculture, but it's going to be a little tighter, and a person does have to use a very sharp pencil to make everything work.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana. Chip Nellinger with us, too. He's from Morton, Illinois, and Blue Reef Agri Marketing will return in a couple of minutes, and we'll take up the future of agriculture and land values. Murray Wise of Murray Wise Associates will be on the phone line. You're, of course, listening to Commodity Week. This is the March 2, 2012 edition. You can find us online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. We finished up February this week. The statewide average temperature for the month was 35.1 degrees. That's 4.6 degrees above normal, and the 15th warmest February since 1895. The statewide average precipitation for the month was 1.6 inches. That's 80% of normal. Snowfall was light in southern and central Illinois with 3 inches or less. It was heavier in northern Illinois with totals of 3 to 8 inches. Looking at the three winter months together, December through February, this was the fourth warmest winter on record and 5.2 degrees above normal. The coldest reading in the state was only minus 6 at both Elizabeth and Galena. The majority of the locations did not even drop below zero this winter. Precipitation was 6.7 inches for the winter, just 3/10 of an inch below normal. Most of that fell as rain, as snow totals were 50 to 75% of normal in northern Illinois and 25 to 50% of normal in central and southern Illinois. The latest National Weather Service outlook for March shows a very strong chance of above normal temperatures and a moderate chance of above normal precipitation across the state. One final thought is that the disaster in Harrisburg, Illinois, is a reminder that severe weather season is upon us. Your best defense is to stay informed of threatening conditions using a weather alert radio, local radio or TV, or your cell phone, and plan ahead for where to take shelter. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the March 2nd edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This comes to you from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. On the phone line today, Murray Wise Associates from Murray, oh, actually, that's Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates. They are located in both Champaign, Illinois, and Naples, Florida, and he joins us from Naples today. Thank you so much for taking the time, Murray.
Nice to be with you, Todd.
Well, look out over the next maybe 5 years and give me your best estimate of what agriculture will look like and how it might change in terms of land values.
First of all, Todd, you know, we're coming off a multi-year period of time of unprecedented changes in values, obviously led by 2011. But as I look forward, I see a more conservative set of circumstances, and we will not see the increases in the next 3 to 5 years that we've seen in the last couple of years. And yet there's still There's still a phenomenal amount of money, Todd, chasing agriculture, both from a farmer point of view. If you look back 5 years ago, the investor was dominating the market, purchasing about 55% of the transactions in the state of Illinois, where, in fact, the investor has been dwarfed by the operating farmer today, where the operating farmer is purchasing 2 acres for every acre purchased by investors. Now, the flip side of that is there's probably more money, or no, there definitely is more money, from an institutional point of view, a pension fund point of view. I've recently been asked that question, and I've stated that there's at least $5 billion worth of capital chasing U.S. agriculture, and there's maybe as much as $10 to $15 billion worth of pension capital that would like to find an entry point into U.S. agriculture. So, again, volatility, yes, we will have volatility paralleled with commodity prices, but the same token, there's still a lot of capital chasing U.S. agriculture.
Murray, this is Chip Nellinger. How much land do you see changing hands every year, and do you think that will increase going forward as farmers age, as we've heard for quite some time?
Chip, that's a great question. If you look at, we look at four counties, Moultrie, Piatt, Champaign, and McLean. And if you, none of those counties have a 1% change ratio of land ownership. Moultrie is the lowest at 0.3%, which, Chip, defies common sense in that there should be more people dying to create more than 0.3% changing hands. And yet on the flip side of that, and we see this on a weekly basis, you go and sit down with Ma and Pa Agriculture today, and you ask them, you know, are you interested in selling your half section or whatever? And they say, yeah, we think we are. And then, you know, they realize that it's going to bring somewhere between, you know, $3 million and $3.5 million. And all of a sudden, Grandma looks at Grandpa and says, you know, it's going to take 12 banks to get this FDIC insured. And all of a sudden, they're going to sell their, you know, 3 to 4% returning asset to put it on deposit at the local bank for less than 0.5%. And with that, even with the, you know, a lot of elderly ownership today, there's just not a lot of interest in selling, period.
Murray, what do you think that the land price will do in central Illinois from this year going into next year? Is it going to increase slowly, or what sort of price level do you think it will be?
You know, back in November, December, I was asked that question several times, and I said I looked for very little, maybe 1% or 2% change. I have to change that today and say that with all the activity we've seen in the last 60 to 90 days, I really think we could once again see at least a 3% to 5% change looking out over the balance of 2012, which was very different than my position 3, 4, 5 months ago. But again, there's just so much capital chasing agriculture today that I look for higher prices, frankly.
Murray, would that be because of farmers buying farm ground or investors?
It's a combination of both, Paul, and it's a very interesting set of circumstances on the basis that the farmer's dominating the market without a doubt, okay? That the operating farmer can add the neighboring quarter or half section or 80, whatever the case may be, and he doesn't have to, you know, hire more labor, he doesn't have to purchase more machinery in most cases, at least, where the investor is looking for, you know, he's making these calculations based upon a fixed cap rate, and he's hoping to achieve a cap rate of X, and all of a sudden, you know, he just isn't getting anything bought. So there's a lot of frustration from the investor's perspective today, a lot of frustration.
Murray, I went to a farm sale with my brother this winter, and there was 190 people there, and there were 4 or 5 men there that were worth $40 million plus. There were 8 to 10 there worth $10 million plus, and there were 20 there that were worth $48 million. And I just about asked the group how many aren't millionaires here. But, you know, as you mentioned, the amount of wealth that's in the Midwest is unbelievable. But besides, I know central Illinois is one of your favorite spots to buy farmland. Give me your second best place that if you had to go out and just begrudgingly buy a farm, where would it be?
Well, that's a great question. And first of all, I'd say, yes, central Illinois is one of my favorite places, but north central Iowa is probably my number one favorite place to buy a farm. And yet, north central, northwest Iowa, and those high-quality Clarion Webster soils is a great place to be. And yet, central Illinois offers some great opportunities at the same time. And to show that I'm putting my money where my mouth is, in the last 90 days, I've personally bought a farm in each of those locations.
So I've got another question for you, Murray, and it relates to you looking forward just to begin again. I want to know, when you think about the marketplace for land, whether it will be driven by, and you've answered this partially already, investors and or farmers, and what the difference is when they're looking at property. So I'm assuming one of the things that farmers always look at is proximity to them, but are there other things that that they should learn from investors and what investors look at in a farm?
Todd, they both have a very different vision, if you will. The investor, you know, always wants the quarter section next door. I mean, that's what he wants and almost has to have, and that's influenced the marketplace greatly, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years. But the investor, you know, he's looking at a cap rate. He's looking at hopefully quality. He's looking at what his return will be, and the investor, in most cases, doesn't care whether it's in, you know, DeKalb County, Sangamon County, or Champaign County. He's just looking for the best opportunity that he can possibly find. And so it makes for a unique marketplace and a very challenging marketplace. And obviously, in the last 6 to 8 weeks, we've seen some astounding sales right across the Midwest, as well as Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, southern Minnesota. We've seen some just unbelievable transactions.
Murray, you've hit a home run. How are you going to pass it on to the next generation without giving it all to the United States government? What should a farmer do out here?
Well, I think the thing that the farmer's not doing is the using a foundation as a phenomenal vehicle, Paul, to protect the asset and at least keep it so your kids can continue to farm it over a period of time. The limited partnership is another great vehicle. There's lots of ways to do that and you know, not give it to the federal government, if you will. And that's a great question, and that's something that everyone needs professional advice on, in my opinion, to pursue the best opportunity. But don't think you need to keep it in your name personally, because, you know, you're not going to run it from the grave in most cases, but you can control it from the grave, if you will, if you get that entity transferred into the right long-term vehicle.
Murray, interest rates extremely, extremely low. Do you have an interest rate opinion going forward, and do you see that as a major risk to the land market?
Well, I've been wrong on interest rates for an extended period of time, but for an investor, we closed a loan in north central Iowa on a very high-quality farm recently at 3.5% fixed for the first 5 years, the next 5 years, 100 basis points over five-year treasuries with a 3% floor and a 6% cap. Now, let me tell you, I never dreamt that I would see 3.5% long-term interest rates for agriculture. And on a go-forward basis, I personally see higher interest rates, but I've also probably been predicting those for at least 3, 4, 5 years incorrectly. And obviously, the Fed has done a phenomenal job at keeping interest rates incredibly low, and yet the idea that you can borrow long-term money starting with a 3 today in agriculture is just beyond my comprehension.
Okay, Murray, one last question, and I'll let you do it in both regions. Your two favorite places to buy, what's too high to buy in central Illinois and to buy in north central Iowa?
Great question, Todd. And in north central Iowa, you know, I've never paid 10 for anything, and I don't intend on paying $10,000 an acre. In central Illinois, I think when you get into that 11-12 zone, you're into the stratosphere from my point of view. And I bought a high-quality farm in north central Illinois recently, and it's, you know, started in the low nines. So I was real comfortable with that, was able to, you know, work out a great leasing arrangement with a local operator, and it will work out well for both of us.
Thanks, Murray.
Nice to be with all of you.
Murray Weiss is with Murray Weiss Associates. A very quick final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with you, Paul Cooley.
I'm excited to be at the Beef House on Tuesday and hope everybody will enjoy the program.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Strong close on Friday. Look for a little pop on Monday to sell.
And Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef.
Sharpen the pencil. 2012 is going to be a very difficult marketing year.
Thanks so much for each of you being in studio with us here at willag.org. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.